In the weeks since her diagnosis, Paloma had not only started seeing less of Ander, she'd also become less connected with her friends. They say she was mainly at home with her mum.
As soon as she was in that house, you know, everything was taken away from her. She couldn't see her friends. She couldn't go outside. She wasn't allowed to have her phone near her face, so she couldn't call people.
Ander ended up feeling a bit hopeless.
You can tell these things kind of after 3.5 years, like, you know, someone pretty inside and out. And I knew it was just a matter of time anyway. And I asked my mum what I should do. And she said, look, you know, you don't want any residual bitterness. You want to avoid it at all costs. You don't want to be the one to break up with her. Just wait it out. And so I did. And then we split up in, I think, mid-March sometime.
After Paloma's breakup with Ander, Chantel and Paloma kept speaking via calls and texts while Chantel was away at university. And some of the things Paloma said worried her.
I had this conversation where I remember her saying that she had a new lump in her armpit, and her mum had told her that the cancer was going out of her body. It was just, you know, like, leaving. And I remember thinking, well, that's not the case, you know. And I was like, are you sure? I think you should do scans. I think you should investigate. I don't know if that's true, you know.
Even without seeing Paloma in person, Chantel could tell she was suffering.
It was hard. And the last few months, she was in so much pain, I could tell. But she was also so good at hiding it as well, in a way of, like, with humour. But I knew it was bad because, I mean, not to be too much information, but I knew she was losing control, like, incontinence quite a lot. And I just knew that that's not normal, you know, to have that every day. And she'd go into quite graphic detail about it because she'd make it jokey, but it's obviously very serious.
In contrast, online and in podcasts, Kate Shemarani describes Paloma as being happy, eating, leaving the house and doing things she enjoyed at home. She does mention her weight, though. Paloma told Chantel at the time she was still happy with the alternative health plan. Chantel tried to do what they always had and find ways to agree to disagree. She was worried that pushing back too hard might leave Paloma even more isolated.
I remember her telling me if her brother or her, well, it was her ex-boyfriend at the time, but I don't really like referring to him as her ex-boyfriend, if that makes sense, because obviously this situation is how that kind of unfolded, I guess. But she told me if I got messages from people, just to block them and ignore them. She said she really didn't want her friends getting involved with this stuff. She'd argued with so many people and she was just too tired to argue. And she'd always mention cutting people off. And it did get in my head a little bit, where I thought, I don't want to be cut off, especially when she's struggling like this.
By July, Chantel found Paloma's messages were getting less and less frequent. Until one day, while Chantel was on her way to visit family in Australia, she got a text from Paloma's mum, Kate, from Paloma's number.
I remember just knowing, I just felt it in me that something bad had happened, because I wouldn't have got these messages otherwise. I had no contact with her mother, like, I did not speak to her at all, just Paloma. And it was from Paloma's phone as well that I got these messages.
Convinced that something was wrong, Chantel texted one of Paloma's other friends.
And I said, look, I think something bad's happened. And I sent a message to her mum basically saying I really, like, would like to know what's happened. Like, I'm so sick with worry. Eventually, I got a message from Kay. It was basically telling me that Paloma had passed away. And yeah, it was like shocking, obviously. But in a way, I knew already, like, I could tell that something had happened. And I was like crying a lot.
And the news also found its way to Ander.
Talk to me about when you found out that Paloma had died. Where were you?
So I was in Japan seeing my best friend, and my mum called me while I was at dinner. And I remember I texted her, like, you know, I'm eating. Is everything okay? I'm eating. Like, can it wait? And she said no. And I just got this pit in my stomach, and then she told me, like, through tears, and I just, like, yeah, I remember it so clearly. Like, I just, like, broke. I was just, like, screaming and crying at the top of my lungs. You know, I had to go back and keep moving. Pack my stuff, get on a flight. I remember I was just crying the whole flight, and just, like, you know, one of the funny things about that was kind of that since we'd split up, like, I hadn't really been able to look at any photos of her. It was kind of really bizarre. Like, I almost did, like, a complete mental separation from it, and it was only after that I was able to, like, look back at them and actually just, like, you know, look at her face and, like, remember everything.
Anda had questions about what had happened. He says he wasn't able to speak to Paloma's mum, and he couldn't find out if there was a funeral taking place.
It was all just cloak and dagger. So we didn't know if there was going to be a funeral. We didn't know what hospital she died at. We didn't know where she was. We didn't know where she was going to where or if she was going to be buried. Nothing.
Chantelle knew a little bit more.
Her mum started arranging this funeral, and I remember it was, like, not many people in it, and she said, you have to keep this a secret. In the end, I decided not to go to this funeral because it felt wrong. Like, just everything in me was saying a few of her friends, like just a few. She had so many friends, like, people should be there. And it felt really, I don't know, it just didn't sit right with me.
Chantelle didn't feel it was fair that the funeral plan was being kept from some of the people who loved Paloma. So she came up with a plan.
I wanted to see if I could record it so that if people needed to watch it, that they could, which is sneaky of me, I guess. I wasn't sure of how to handle it, but I decided not to go. And then she just completely did not respond to me. She didn't send me a link. I remember I'd gone home. I was just sitting on the couch crying, and my dad, like, came home, and, like, yeah, I remember, like, feeling kind of robbed.
Among the people not told about her funeral were her former boyfriend, Anda, and also her twin brother, Gabriel.
That was particularly hard on Gabriel. For me, I don't really know what I would have done if I'd known the location, because at the same time, while there's nothing that could have stopped me going, I think had I gone, it would have been a shit show again. And it's like, you know, Paloma doesn't deserve that, like, in her memory, you know, for us to be fighting at her funeral.
In a podcast interview, Kate described Paloma's funeral as, quote, a very private service. With the help of Paloma's old university, Gabriel, Anda, and Paloma's older brother, Sebastian, organised their own memorial, a chance for them to remember Paloma.
What was that like, the memorial?
It was amazing, amazing. We got in touch with her Cambridge College, and they just took care of everything. Like, you know, they organised this lovely chapel service, and it had live music, like, that we had chosen. And we did some speeches, and then they had, like, a little sort of reception where there were photos playing of her and nice food, and we were allowed to wander around the college grounds. And I remember I, you know, went out with a gang of, like, 15 of my friends, and I was just, like, telling them all the, like, stupid stuff we'd done, like, around college. I was like, oh, you know, I weed out that window once, or whatever, you know, stuff like that.
Did you get the chance to say anything?
I did, yeah. I did a speech.
What did you say?
I learned pretty quickly that behind her gorgeous, elegant exterior was a girl who couldn't fall asleep without an episode of Friends playing in the background. couldn't go a day without her hot chocolate fix. Put, frankly, way too much cream cheese on her bagels. Behind the cool, confident Barbie girl who'd go on to host the Cambridge fashion show was an even cooler nerd who loved nothing more than spending an afternoon perusing Waterstones to claim yet another free book with her growing stack of loyalty cards. She was always thoughtful and kind, the sort of kindness that makes you feel comfortable and confident in your own skin, but also leaves you sort of wondering how she made it seem so effortless. She showed me ways to care for the people around me that I'd never even dreamt of, and she always led by example.
Watching the recording feels like I'm getting to know Paloma even better, including hearing from her twin, Gabriel.
I'm told by many Spanish speakers that Paloma means white dove. However, a few also take the time to tell me that another translation is pigeon. I don't know if my sister grew into the name or if in a prophetic way the name chose her, but I think we can agree that this dissonance encapsulated my sister.
But I'm struck by the fact that months after Paloma died, there is a sense of there being unanswered questions among her friends and family.
There is a life still out there to be lived that my sister was not able to live, and it is my responsibility to live that life that she lost. I will see you in the wrinkles your face wasn't able to reach. I will hear you in the justice you deserved, and I will feel you in the joy that you missed. I will live the life you weren't able to live, Paloma. Only then can I give it back to you when we meet again.
When Gabriel and Sebastian Shemarani first contacted me to tell me about what had happened to their sister, I couldn't really believe what I was hearing. I've spent more than 5 years investigating the real-world consequences of misinformation and conspiracy theories, and this felt like it could be the starkest example yet. And while conspiracy land can mean an intangible social media world punctuated by misinformation and hate, a parallel universe with anti-vaccine festivals and conspiracy theory-inspired holiday retreats, it can also exist inside a home. So I want to start by speaking to Paloma's brothers to understand what happened to their sister and how anti-medicine ideas spread and evolve.
You know, I'd come home from school and she would tell me some nonsense about some new mystical property of a vegetable that she'd found.
That's on the next episode of Mariana in Conspiracy Land 2 for BBC Radio 4.
In the beginning, they just called it The Thing.
Cuba, 2016.
All the dogs started barking, and then a loud sound. It felt like my head was in a vice. This jarring, disorienting pain.
The first American CIA agents and diplomats began to hear a sound.
They were shaken and very anxious.
This is something not natural. This was some kind of focused beam.
The thing seemed to be attacking them.
It's not accidental.
Havana Helmet Club. Listen on BBC Sounds.